Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number 175 of the Canadian Football Countdown, our Week 14 CFL recap. We are a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network. I'm Ryan Coop here this evening, joined by, well, you the viewer, you the listener. Yes, it's just us here this evening. A nice little cozy one-on-one chat between me and you who are listening here. And, well, I guess you're chatting with everybody else as well. Mike, Trey, Adam, they all get a wonderful night off tonight because they've worked so hard and delivered so much over the past number of weeks. I think they deserve a night off here and there for as we get ready for a big final stretch of the season. So I figured I would show up here tonight, give you a quick recap. I see a couple people in the chat here already. That's great to see, because we are live across a variety of platforms, all made possible by our presenting sponsor, Game Time TV. Visit watch.gametimetv.ca or follow on Facebook at facebook.com/gametimetvmb to learn more. Before we go any further, as always, I do want to acknowledge that the Canadian Football Countdown is brought to you from Treaty One Territory, traditional territory of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Ojibwe, Dakota, and Dene peoples, and the homeland of the Métis Nation, as well as from Treaty 4 territory, traditional territory of the Cree, Soto, Dakota, Lakota, Nakota, and Métis Nation. Now, tonight, I'm going to go through and give you three key takeaways for each team from the games of week number 14. We'll recap our betting results from the week, our CFL Fantasy League results, and of course, give the crews players of the week and update our power rankings. Before we get into all that, I do want to thank another sponsor for this episode of the podcast. That is BetStamp. BetStamp is a site that helps you find the best value across many different sports books. There's so many out there these days. How do you know you're getting the best bang for your buck? Well, they provide you the info at no additional cost. You simply pull up the game on the BetStamp app. You see the odds offered by each of the different sportsbook affiliates, and it helps you place the bet that's going to maximize the return. And if you like a pick, you can sign up directly through the bet link page for the corresponding site, place your bet, and track it all in the BetStamp app as well. You can track your wagers. You can get analytics on your betting across the season. And if you want extra insight, you can see who others are picking through the commission-free marketplace by just going and searching for people like us here at the Canadian Football Countdown. You can find us on there at CF Countdown Pod. You can also find Trey and his picks every single week at Trey CF Countdown. And through BetStamp's verified bet tracking, you get the guarantee that the odds we pick are based on are verified and legitimate. Visit betstamp.app or sign up worth to visit and download it from your local app store. Sign up free today with referral code CFC. Best of luck with your wagers, and remember, always bet responsibly. Now let's get straight into recapping the games from week 14, and it starts off with the Montreal Alouettes hosting the BC Lions. They come out with a 31-10 win. Go back to our Wednesday night preview show. We all took the Lions to win this one, but I was a little bit hesitant about them going across to the East Division for a big matchup with Montreal. I feel like they always struggle with that big travel time. Made me a little bit nervous, and it seemed like that was the case here again tonight in this week with Montreal coming out, playing really strong here. BC, nothing going for them. Let's take a look at the three key takeaways for each team. Let's start off with the BC Lions, and I want to start off with, has anybody seen the run game for the BC Lions? James Butler, strong start to the season. He started off with those four touchdowns against the Edmonton Elks, two on the ground, two through the air in week number one, over 100 yards rushing. He had a couple weeks in a row of 60, 70 yards, but it's just flatlined and mystifyingly so ever since Nathan Rourke went out due to injury. You would think they'd lean on a guy like James Butler a little bit more. Four carries the week before, the game before against Saskatchewan for 18 yards, six carries for 27 in this game against Montreal, especially when you've got, you know, less experienced quarterbacks that are looking to, you know, get some confidence in them. You got to use the run game more. Jordan Matsumits has been so good all season long with the offensive play calling, but it feels like it just kind of dried up here. You got to get the run game going a little bit more here for me if BC is going to get some life in them offensively. And speaking of life, I think for the Lions the last 2 weeks, it's just been no Nathan, no Hart. Nathan Rourke, we all know the impact he made on the field. I mean, he put up record-breaking numbers, it seems, week after week for the Lions this season, and it didn't seem like anybody could really stop them offensively. And then we all knew that it was going to, you know, be a bit of an impact on them when he went out due to injury. But I was one of the people that did say that BC was going to be fine because of the talent they had at wide receiver, because of the talent they've had at defense. Well, it just seems like the motivation hasn't been there the last two games. And maybe, you know, maybe we're all underestimating, or at least I was, the impact that Nathan Rourke made, not necessarily on the field, but in that locker room as a guy to rally over and rally around and just, you know, try to help him succeed. You know, rookie guy, or technically not a rookie, but Canadian kid, getting the starting role, taking over for Michael Riley, which is not easy shoes to fill. Seemed like the team had that as a rallying point, and it's just kind of taken the wind out of their sails a little bit the last couple of weeks here for BC, which is definitely a concern. Now, the question remains, can Vernon Adams Jr. inject that life back into him? We saw him play only a couple snaps in this one. Antonio Pipkin got the start, didn't get a whole lot done. Vernon Adams came in for a few plays, didn't do much there either, but he should be getting the start, it sounds like, coming into the matchup this week. So now here's the time for, you know, they made the trade, and I think it was a good trade for them to make. And he's known to, you know, have big play potential. He's big play VA, is what they call him, right? And they've got a bunch of big play receivers. So if those guys can link up, you know, the offense gets going, takes a bit of pressure off of the defense, that's going to help them get back on track here as well. So for BC, that's the situation for them right now. And it leads to a very tough next couple of weeks where they're playing a home and home for home field, basically, in the playoffs. You know, at this point, it's looking like Winnipeg's going to win the West Division. I don't think there's any team that's going to catch them at this point, you know, where everybody's at with BC losing the last couple of games. Okay, I'll eat the crow on that one. I said BC was still going to host the West even after Nathan Rourke went down. Yeah, that's not happening. It's clear that, you know, they've lost the last couple. Winnipeg still won a couple there. Now BC's playing basically with Calgary for trying to get that number two spot to host that West Division semifinal. And they play each other in the next 2 weeks, and that's going to be massive matchups for these two teams that are currently tied at 8 wins. BC's got a game in hand. They got to turn it around quick here and pick up those key wins against Calgary here, because I think BC is a team that's going to need that home field advantage in the playoffs. You know, they play in a dome at home. They don't play their home games in the cold weather. Whereas if all of a sudden you go out on the road to, say, Calgary, well, where they're used to the cold weather games, BC is always better at home than they are on the road. They're dicey at times on the road. I don't know if I love them going on a playoff game out to McMahon Stadium in Calgary here, especially if it's snowy, terrible weather out in November. So this is going to be a big couple of weeks for a team that's taken a bit of a downward slide here the past 2 weeks and really needs to bounce back. So we'll see what they do going forward here. On the other side of the matchup, a big win for Montreal here. And the biggest key in this one was that the disciplined defense dominates. This is what we've been talking about with Montreal all season long, is where's the discipline? It's 100 yards of penalties, 150 yards of penalties nonstop. Kahari Jones apparently was the problem, so let's fire him and have Danny Machocha take over. And oh yeah, that's going to help with the discipline. Oh wait, no, it hasn't at all. Well, the past couple of weeks, they've cleaned it up a little bit. Ever since that big game against Hamilton where they somehow pulled out the win with so many penalties, you know, they took fewer penalties last time. I believe last game was against Ottawa. And this week, they got it under control, only 5 for 42. That's not bad. That's pretty much what BC had in this game as well. And when they're not taking the penalties, this defense is pretty darn good. We've seen this defense put up You know, I thought the best game a defense has put up against the Bombers all season, they blitzed Caleros all night, and that led to good things for them. We saw a huge game from them against Saskatchewan earlier in the year, and now they put up 25 fantasy points against the BC Lions this week, a team that normally does not give up a ton from the defense. They had, you know, they had 4 or 5 sacks on the night, probably a handful of turnovers, 4 turnovers here as well for that Montreal defense. I think they're a very underrated crew that doesn't get enough respect, and it's because of the discipline. So if they can keep that up, yeah, this defense can compete as one of the top ones in the league. My second point here on the Montreal Alouettes is I'm very high on the play of Reggie White Jr., who seems to be on a roll, was the leading receiver for the team this week. You know, he's at 630 yards on the season in 12 games for Reggie White Jr. That's good enough to put him decently up here at 15th among all wide receivers in the league. We saw him start to come on a little bit last season, late in the season, to take on kind of that number three receiver role behind Eugene Lewis and Jake Winicky. Well, he's up to number two now. He has passed Jake Winicky as the second go-to target. It's always going to be Eugene Lewis as number one, but Trevor Harris seems to like what Reggie White Jr. brings to the offense. He seems to target his way. You know, he got the big catch that led to that win over Hamilton. So it's good to see for a team that, you know, I lamented in the preseason doesn't have very much depth at wide receiver. It's nice to see a guy like Reggie White Jr. step up and be able to fill a role. And, you know, he's at 623 yards at this point on the season, got a handful of games left. How far can he go yet on the season? Can he hit the 1,000 mark? He'd need some big games down the stretch, but nonetheless, a good season for him, kind of with his second year of key role with the team. My third point here on the Montreal Alouettes is just that, you know, they keep winning against the West, and they're winning some big games. And we talk so much about the East versus the West and how the East division is lackluster and they don't stand a chance against the West. Well, Montreal beat Saskatchewan earlier this year. They beat Winnipeg. They're the only team to do so. And now they beat the BC Lions. And sure, it's not the same BC team without Nathan Rourke at the helm. I'll give you that. But they've won 3 key divisional matchups, cross-divisional matchups against the West Division here. And to me, that means good things if, you know, it gets in the, you get into the playoffs, okay. You win a couple games in the playoffs, you get to the Grey Cup. I don't see if they can keep that discipline under control, like I mentioned. Montreal could be that team that we always talk about. The West is so dominant, but then the East somehow is going to come in and take it in the Grey Cup. And maybe Montreal's that team. They've shown the ability to get themselves up for big games against big, tough opponents. Now they got to just consistently keep winning the games against the easier opponents to lock themselves up a good spot in the playoffs, to get themselves to the finals. Which if they do, I think they, you know, in a one-game matchup, I don't hate it for Montreal, if I'm being honest. Let's move on to the second game of the week. We had a triple header on Saturday, and it started off in Ottawa with the Toronto Argonauts coming into town and taking a 24-19 win over the Red Blacks, a game that Toronto jumped out to an early lead in this one. And then second half, Ottawa made a decent comeback. They came awfully close at the end of the game, but fell just short. Let's look at the Argos side of things first. MBT for MOP. I'm calling it now. I think he's the East nominee. I like what I've seen from McLeod Bethel-Thompson this season. You know, he's had a pretty good year, all things considered. The East division, to be fair, there's not a whole lot to go off of if you're looking for MOP picks. But McLeod Bethel-Thompson's the leading passer in the CFL. He's at 3,427 yards in 12 games. He's got a 16 touchdown to an 11 interception ratio. Yeah, it's not the greatest on the pick trend, but a lot of quarterbacks are hovering around 10 to 11 interceptions on the season. And he's got the third most touchdowns behind Zach Caleros, who's out in the West, Nathan Rourke, who's also out in the West. You know, more often than not, a quarterback ends up getting that MOP nominee, it seems. And who are you going to give it to out East? You're not going to give it to Caleb Evans or Nick Arbuckle. You're not going to give it to maybe Trevor Harris if he has a strong end to the season. I'll give you that. but you're not going to give it to certainly to Dane Evans and crew over in Hamilton. So I think McLeod Bethel Thompson's got a good shot, and he had a great game in this one. I thought, you know, it tapered off a little bit at the end. He's still got to get the touchdowns there, but 365 yards passing for McLeod Bethel Thompson, move the ball down the field. They just got to convert. If he can take that next step, you know, he truly becomes one of the elite quarterbacks in the CFL. I would say he's one of the better quarterbacks in the CFL, given maybe that's more of a poor statement on the state of quarterbacking in this league right now. But I think he's just missing that finish to his drives. And that's something that, you know, we just talked about Trevor Harris. I think that's something for him as well. Something that those are two guys that have the play there. If they could only finish the drives, we'd move them up more into the elite category. But good game here for McLeod Bethel Thompson. I like him. I've always been a big fan of his, and he's led a couple key drives to put games away this season. And if we want to talk about, you know, I compared last week on the show, Winnipeg to Toronto as two teams that, you know, played some rough games but pulled out some wins. Yeah, McLeod Bethel Thompson, I think, has done a good job of that this year. So a little more consistency, but I think he's doing a good job. And I think he will be the East MOP nominee this season. And it's certainly easy for him to throw for a lot of yards when you've got Gittens, great Mittens, Curly Gittens Jr. having himself a career day. 8 catches, 161 yards, 1 touchdown. He had 12 targets on the day. A big day here for the Canadian wide receiver, who is the leading wide receiver among all Canadians in the CFL. You know, he got in the lineup kind of as that extra receiver the first couple games last year. Then some injuries happened. He got more into a role, and he became MBT's go-to target down the stretch of last season. I had high hopes for him this year. And big game in this one, and 759 yards on the season, currently sitting at ninth in the league in receiving yards. You know, you talk about an offense that has Eric Rogers. Yeah, he's been injured. Davaris Daniels, Markeith Ambles, Brandon Banks, you name it. You know, Curly Gittens Jr., I could see how people would think he'd be an afterthought in that offense, but I love seeing Canadian receivers just dominate for their team and be the go-to guy. And we've seen a couple of them around the league, but Curly Gittens Jr. is definitely one of my favorites. So kudos to him on a great game. And then my other point here on the Argos is I think it's time for a dual back system with Daniel Adeboye. You know, AJ Ouellette has been kind of one-dimensional in that his involvement in the passing game. He hasn't rushed a whole lot in this game. 10 carries, 29 yards. That's a 2.9 average. Yeah, he scored a touchdown on the ground, sure, but his involvement is really here to fit in the passing game. He went 4 for 4 for 26 yards. We've seen a couple of, you know, things this season, games this year, where he's one of the go-to leading receivers. That's great, but I think you need to get the run game a little more involved. And maybe that's where, you know, your fifth, I believe it was 15th overall draft pick, Daniel Adeboye, in this year's draft, Canadian kid. Maybe you rotate him in for some of the rushing plays and go a little more kind of like those NFL offenses do, where you have him as your lead rushing running back. We have, you got AJ Ouellette as your receiving running back here. And maybe that's part of it for the Toronto Argonauts, something that could liven up that offense a little bit down the stretch. I love dual back systems as much as I hate them for fantasy. I would love to see them deploy that because I think they've got some talented backs that could be used in separate situations. On the other side of things here, the Ottawa Red Blacks, well, it's time we put the TD back in TD place. This is a team that continues to find ways to lose and just not score touchdowns on offense in their home building. They're yet to find out. They're yet to really find the end zone much at all. They've played 6 games at home this season. They have 1 passing touchdown and 7 rushing touchdowns. 5 of them coming from backup quarterback Caleb Evans, who did score 1 or 2 of those rushing touchdowns while he was in the game as a starter for a couple weeks earlier this season. Sure. One passing touchdown in six games? Are you kidding me? For a team that just can't do anything right at home, it seems they can't find a way to buy a win at home. Yeah, that's part of the problem, is you can't put any offensive touchdowns on the board. Like, I don't know what it is. Them and Edmonton, we'll get to that later. But it just seems home games here for the Ottawa Red Blacks are a no-go from the offensive standpoint. You know, they've put up some big totals on the road, but even with Nick Arbuckle seemingly bringing some more life to that offense, they can't find the end zone. So as much as I wanted to talk about McLeod Bethel-Thompson's struggles there, it's much worse for Ottawa, and that's why they find themselves here with another loss at home. Bright spot for them, though. What a great offseason acquisition Jalen Acklin was for them this year. He's the first receiver in the league to pass 1,000 yards. He had a decent day on this one with 62. You know, they brought a lot of pieces in the offseason, and he was a guy who had good games in Hamilton previously, but was not necessarily the go-to receiver with Brandon Banks and Braylon Addison and such there. And now he's carved that role out for Ottawa. And as despite the lack of offense from this team, somehow they have the league's first 1,000-yard receiver. And it's nice to see him put his game together here and make a name for himself. And kudos to Sean Burke for, you know, pulling in his guy, knowing what he is from their time together in Hamilton, bringing him over and being a successful part of that offense. Then the last thing here on the Ottawa Red Blacks is I think it's clear all eight other teams have conspired to don't kick it to Devontae Dedmon, because he really does not. They brought him in 3 games ago, I think it was at this point. He really hasn't broken out like we'd expect him to. He did have a 57-yard return in this one on a missed field goal, but one kickoff return, Jackson Bennett had 2. So that means teams are kicking away from Devontae Dedmon, and really, can you blame him after he scored 5 touchdowns in his first 15 career games? Like, I would kick away from him too. That's what I would do if I was a coach or if I was a kicker. So for a guy that we thought was going to bring a bunch of life to this team, he really hasn't yet, because teams are game planning well against him. So how do you do that then? How do you make better use of him if you're Ottawa? Maybe it's time to start deploying Devontae Dedmon into that offense. Like, I feel like I keep clamoring every week and every year. Let's move on to the third game of the week, the second on the Saturday doubleheader, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders coming into Winnipeg for the Banjo Bowl, and the Bombers take this one handily, 54-20, the largest victory in Banjo Bowl history by Winnipeg's side. Of course, Saskatchewan did have a big one of their own back, I believe, 2009. The biggest storyline probably for this one was it was a crappy start for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Literally a crappy start. A team that all of a sudden was missing a number of different guys due to food poisoning, stomach issues, whatever it was pre-game. They were missing a couple wide receivers. Keon Schaefer-Baker was one of those. You know, key guys who was missing there. They had a couple offensive linemen, apparently some guys on IVs before the game, just trying to get enough fluids to play in this one. The defense missed a number of pieces. And yeah, it's going to be hard to play a game when you're missing that many guys due to that. So, you know, Saskatchewan was kind of the underdog coming into this, given that, of course, and it really didn't start off well for them on the field either, when the first quarter, 2 offensive plays, that might be a record for the least number of offensive plays run in a quarter in CFL history. You surely can't get worse, right? Like it's either 1 or 0. If somebody completely had an entire quarter without putting up an offensive play, find me that stat line, because I would love to see it. But the Bombers had 1 long drive. The Riders had 2 and out. The Bombers had another long drive. And once you're behind like that and you're missing players out in the field, it's just really for Saskatchewan. It's hard to come back from that. They made it close. They made it interesting at the start of the third quarter with a Mario Alford kick return touchdown. But I think they were just gassed later on in the game, and it was probably due to the defense being out there so much in the first quarter. Of course, wishing all of the riders a good bill of health going forward here. That's definitely not fun to deal with, especially, I imagine, as a professional athlete trying to go out there and play a big game and having to deal with that. So hopefully a good bill of health going forward for them, but a rough way to deal with this game here against their Prairie rival. One thing I did like for the Riders, though, I did like Craig Dickinson's dice rolls in this one, especially early on in the game. I think it was, or I guess it was in the second quarter. You know, the Bombers are up a couple of touchdowns. Saskatchewan finally gets a drive together after having no plays the entire first quarter besides those two. And then they hit third down and they decide to go for it and they convert on it. And then they move down the field and then they hit third down and they decide to go for it again. And I appreciate the aggressive play calling. I appreciate the dice rolls. It led to a touchdown for them. I believe Cody Fajardo punched that one in. Yeah, it was risky. I think it could have gone either way. I think if Saskatchewan failed one of those third down conversions, that could have been a nightmare for them. You know, you're down 14 or 13, I think it was. At that point, all of a sudden, you had a chance to score a field goal, make it 10. Then you give up the ball. Maybe Winnipeg, you know, goes back down the field. And that's curtains on the night probably for you at that point. But I admire it. I think coaches should be more aggressive. They should be more dicey. They should play to win. And this was a team that, you know, was missing some guys, was down early, needed a spark. And this is what they were going to do to get that spark. And it worked at the time for them. So kudos to Craig Dickinson for having the guts to go out and gamble a couple of times and having it pay off. And once again, the story for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders is that the penalty problems continue to persist. This is a team that, while we just talked earlier about Montreal getting things together in the penalty department, 13 flags for 141 yards here for Saskatchewan, a couple key ones, a couple pass interference calls that, you know, put Winnipeg in prime scoring position and helped them a lot here for a team that, you know, clearly needs some more discipline. They did do a couple of things to help in that regard this week. They did let Garrett Marino go. They did say, Duke Williams, if you're not playing, you're not going to be on the sidelines, so he doesn't take one of those penalties anymore. But you got to take less penalties here. And you know, Trey hopped into the live chat here and said, yeah, the Riders looked rattled all day, a lot of yelling at the refs and getting to the team. It probably didn't help that everybody was tired, right? Everybody was tired. They were frustrated from having to deal with what they had to deal with in that one. And they took it out in an undisciplined way in this one. And that's what hurt here for the Riders more than anything, I think, is when you're taking that many penalties, that's either halting a bunch of your own drives or it's giving the other team prime position to score here. And that's what ended up happening. But rough game here for Saskatchewan, certainly for a team we thought was taking a step forward. I don't buy a whole lot into this beatdown for them because of the health issues. I think you know, a fully healthy Saskatchewan team going forward has the potential to pull out a couple big wins down the stretch here. And as Adam's also here in the live chat. Hey guys. The offensive line was actually decent. Yeah, give them credit for all the pieces they were missing and all the pieces that weren't 100%. They didn't look too bad against you know, Willie Jefferson, Jackson Jeffcoat, and the crew there. So it's maybe a bright spot for them here. Over on the Winnipeg side of things, well, they brought their Banjo Bowl best to the table. Like I said, their biggest win in Banjo Bowl history. And this is a team that finally looked like they had a dominant victory. I said up until now, what are they now? They're 12-1 on the season. I kept saying they are the sloppiest 9-1 football team. They're the sloppiest 10-1, 11-1 football team. Finally, they looked like the team that matches their record. A good blowout victory is what we were looking for from this team. And it was nice to see it, especially in such a big divisional matchup against your rivals, you know, a very hyped up game. Good to see the Bombers in all facets kind of the game, kind of bringing their best here and showing why they are capable of being a 12-1 football team. Now, the second point, and then this goes hand in hand, is I thought Chef Buck Pierce cooked up quite some creativity in the kitchen on this one. And maybe this is a case of Buck Pierce earlier in the season, you know, doesn't want to show his whole hand. He wants to keep some of his playbook around and brings it out come Labor Day, Banjo Bowl, and the stretch of the season. I thought there was some good creativity. I saw more pitches. More tosses in this game from Zach Collaros to running backs, wide receivers, you name it, than I think I've ever seen before. And we saw a little bit of Dakota Prukop in the Chris Streveler role. He was living his best Chris Streveler life. I'm surprised he didn't walk off the field after that game in a fur coat. Dakota Prukop, you know, backup quarterback, third string technically. Yeah, he was involved heavily in this game. He had 7 carries for 30 yards. He had 2 touchdowns. He even, I believe he attempted a pass that just missed. I think it was Nick Dembski that could have gone for a long play here. That's a large reason of why Winnipeg's offense took up so much time on the field. 9 yards on first down, put Dakota Prukop in on second down, either for a 1-yard plunge. Maybe, you know, it's a passing play. Maybe it's a bit of a misdirection, a run off the side. It's clear they're starting to get him more involved in the offense like they did with Chris Streveler. Not quite to the same capacity, but I think it could get there. And I think they see a lot of the same things from him. And that's what I was excited about when they brought Dakota Prukop in the offense. Is Sean McGuire a little bit last year, Chris Streveler the year before. The Bombers like that backup quarterback who can do that short yardage and make some magic happen with the fun with the playbook. So I really liked the way they used Dakota Prukop. I really liked, you know, some of the offensive play calling in this one. They got Johnny Augustine involved in the run game. Greg McRae, Nick Dembski's always involved. They utilized a number of different receivers here. Kudos to Buck Pierce, who I think more often than not this season has put together an excellent offensive game plan. And that brings me to my third point on the Bombers here, which is Winnipeg's roster. Yeah, that's pretty deep. They've got some depth, and it was tested in this one. You know, you had a couple of guys. Nick Taylor went down. Noah Hallett just came back from injury. He went down. Drew Olitarski left the game and didn't come back. But they seem to find other guys stepping up left and right here. And Brendan O'Leary-Orange, who just came back from injury, scored his first career touchdown this one, had 2 catches for 33 yards. I think also drew a pass interference call that led to another touchdown there for Winnipeg. Yeah, he filled in nicely. A guy who was kind of a backup receiver on the active roster entire season last year, but never really got into game action. Well, he's going to get maybe into it a little bit here. We'll see how Drew Olitarski's doing. But this is an offense where we've seen a number of pieces that I don't think we knew were going to be this involved in the offense coming into this year. You know, Dalton Schoen is going to win Rookie of the Year. He had another touchdown. Greg McRae has gotten involved, you know, came in as the third string running back here and then moved into a wide receiver slash running back role. Don't forget Carlton Agadosi, who had the best like debut game ever and then unfortunately a serious injury. And now Brendan O'Leary-Orange stepping up as well. So it's good to see some guys here in some depth positions. And that's just on the offense, you know, defensive side of the ball. We've seen a number of guys fill in roles as well. You know, Donald Rutledge has played really well this year. Jamal Parker came in and is now filling a role at defensive backfield. I think he's looked all right. So some key pieces for the Bombers. You know, as Trey says in the chat, that scouting department is unreal. They seem to keep finding diamonds in the rough. And it's giving vibes of, honestly, John Huffnagel and the Calgary Stampeders, I would say, who consistently find those pieces that we're not talking about preseason, and then we're talking about down the stretch here. So big win for the Bombers as they take the Banjo Bowl this year, and they take both games in the Prairie Rivalry, which means you're going to want to tune in Wednesday night on our Week 15 preview show, because Trey and Adam had a bit of a bet around this game, and I believe there may be a speech in order from one member of the podcast to come on Wednesday's show. So a little plug for that. Stay tuned for that. But let's go to their last game of the week, which was equally a beatdown as the Calgary Stampeders beat the Edmonton Elks 56-28. Total beatdown in the Battle of Alberta. You think Winnipeg has a great game, putting up 50. Yeah, Calgary puts up 56 on the board. And rematch of the week before, when it was a closer game, this one wasn't close at all. And it started off early with Calgary's big play defense and special teams striking again and doing so in fine fashion. And that's really what they are. They're a big play defense. They're not a consistently good defense, I would say. You know, they're up there in the yardage allowed and in the touchdowns and allowed and most statistical categories of that nature. The Stampeders defense is kind of one of the lower ones, worst ones in the league. But when you look at sacks, when you look at interceptions, when you look at forced fumbles, they're top three in the league. And they did that again in this one. You know, they had, I believe, a punt block that led them to the 1 or 2 yard line that led to a touchdown. They had a pick six, I believe, early in this game. The defense stepping up and making plays and kind of offsetting what we see from, you know, the bad side of things, which is the yardage and the points given up. And they make up for it sometimes with these big plays. So that's definitely going to help you pick up a win if you can start the game off with not even your offense, but your defense and your special teams leading to a key number of points on the board. Another guy who led to a number of points on the board was touchdown Tommy Stevens, who really took the touchdown Tommy Nomaker. I don't even know if he goes by that. I'm calling him that now. To the max, 4 touchdowns from the backup quarterback, the third string quarterback of the Calgary Stampeders, all on, I think, 1 yard plunges pretty much. He did have 10 carries for 29 yards to his credit, but 4 touchdowns. The ultimate vulture of fantasy points is Tommy Stevens, who the team puts 56 points on the board, and it's a quarterback nobody takes, is taking 24 fantasy points out of that. Yeah, come on, from a fantasy standpoint. Maybe we'll see him be at $10,000 this coming week. I don't think so, but you know, it's one of those things that seems to be pretty common in the CFL, and he did that well here, so I had to give him a shout out, because anybody scoring 4 touchdowns in a game is absurd. But what was even more impressive was the hustle and the block he threw on, I think it was Kadeem Carey, going for a long touchdown there late in the fourth quarter. You know, quarterback running downfield to make a tackle, to make a block, to get your running back in the end zone. You gotta love it. You gotta love it. Kudos to Tommy Stevens for a brilliant play and a number of big plays on the night. Now let's and stick with the quarterbacks and let's talk about the little bit of Mayer and Malik magic. Jake Mayer and Malik Henry, it's clear he is his go-to receiver, his targets. He seems to be the go-to target guy every week now. 7 catches on 10 targets for 98 yards and a touchdown for him this season. We expected big things from Reggie Bagleton. We expected big things from Kamar Jordan this year, who's been a bit of a disappointment. He didn't play in this one due to injury. But Malik Henry, I think, is now that go-to receiver for the Calgary Stampeders. And, you know, he's right up there. He's 8th in the league in receiving yards. He has a couple hundred more than Reggie Bagleton, despite playing a couple fewer games here, and he's really become the go-to guy. We saw flashes of Malik Henry's brilliance in the punt return role last season, and I just mentioned earlier, you know, John Huffnagel finding those diamonds in the rough. Yeah, I think they found another one with Malik Henry here, who has been part of that revitalization. And, you know, Jake Mayer's come in, he's found some chemistry with them, seems to target him now. 4 touchdowns in 3 weeks. He had 3 against Winnipeg 2 weeks ago. Malik Henry is a vital part of that offense and is having himself a heck of a season, and did so again in this particular game. On the other side of the matchup for Edmonton, the home team horror story continues. This is a team that it's closing in, what, maybe on 1,100 days? It's for sure over 1,000 since they've last won a home game back in 2019. And an absurd stat came out in this one. I believe I want to credit this to Danny Austin over in Calgary, who pointed out that this season the Calgary Stampeders have more points in Edmonton than Edmonton does. And Calgary's played, what, 2 games there? Edmonton's played 6. So that goes to show you how rough it's been at home for this team. much like Ottawa, a team that honestly seems to have road advantage. They seem to play better at on the road. I don't know what it is about playing at home. I don't know if then now it's just the pressure because this has been such a long spell for them that, it seems they cannot find a way to win at home in this one. And they cannot find a way to be competitive at home. And for all of the things that, you know, Victor Cooley and his crew have done with the off-field experience over in Edmonton to really, you know, get people back in the stands, it was looking a little bit empty at Commonwealth in this game. The stadium's getting emptier. And I don't blame people for not wanting to go to a game when you expect it to be blown out like this every single time at home. So Edmonton, Ottawa, both of y'all got to find a way to get a home win here or there, or just find a way to have a close game here, at least against a rival who you clearly can play well against because you did it the week before. Now, I don't want to be all doom and gloom on them. I do have some bright spots. I do think there's some exciting things. Edmonton's in next year mode. The Elks aren't making the playoffs. I think if they lose to Saskatchewan this week, they're officially eliminated from the playoffs. Now it's all a tryout for next year. And I think a good part of that is, air quotes, backup Kevin Brown boosting the run game. And I put him in air quotes because depth chart shenanigans continue from Chris Jones with the running back position. Every week he lists a starting running back who doesn't end up being the starting running back. Kevin Brown had the big game last week, thought maybe, put him in the fantasy lineup this week. But depth chart comes out, Ante Milanovic-Litre is the starting running back. How many carries did he have in the game? Zero. He had zero. He was not the starting running back at all in this game. The depth chart's just shenanigans, have to stop. As a fantasy player, you know, for those that bet, that impacts things. I get, you know, gamesmanship, and of course, leave it to Chris Jones to be the one to go the gamesmanship route here. But put who's actually starting on the depth chart, and that should be Kevin Brown going forward here. 10 carries, 91 yards for him in this game. Honestly, he's closing in on being the leading running back for the Elks all season. I think it's Litre at 136 on this or something like that on the season in terms of yardage rushing. And in two games, he's right there. And part of that's been because they've been rotating running backs all season long. 190 yards, for Ante Milanovic-Litre. And Kevin Brown is at 136 in two games. So he has injected a bit of life. He's averaging 9.1 yards per carry. He's getting involved in the passing game here. So I think he's potentially the go-to guy going forward here at the running back position. James Wilder Jr. is out for the year. Litre hasn't done a whole lot. Malik Irons didn't do a whole lot. You had Sherman Beatty. I think they released him or put him back on the practice roster. Kevin Brown's come in and played two nice games in a row. So I hope he continues to inject some life into that run game, which hopefully opens things up for the pass game here for Edmonton as well. And speaking of bright spots, I think they have a number of bright spots to build off of for next year. I'm high on a lot of guys in this Elks offense that they've shown in the last couple of weeks. Kevin Brown's one of them. Dylan Mitchell has had a phenomenal two games. He had five catches for 120 yards in this one. In fact, three games I think he's played now on the season with them, two as a starter for sure. He's had at least a 45-yard catch in each of them. So he's becoming that big play threat receiver that could forge himself away in the offense here down the stretch and into next season as all of these guys play for jobs. Jalen Marshall didn't do a whole ton in terms of yardage, but did have a touchdown. I think that's a nice piece for them there as well. And Christian Salisbury seems like he may be filling in nicely in the return game. So these are a couple of guys that we didn't really know their names very much before this that are starting to potentially play themselves into guys that they can build off of going into next year. And I'll put Taylor Cornelius in that category as well. 70% passing, 292 yards, two touchdowns and an interception. Not a bad day, despite losing a game by 28. I think he continues to put up some of the top fantasy numbers among quarterbacks in the league. And I think he's very underrated for because of the record of the Elks. And if they can get some of those pieces, get some chemistry going, yeah, maybe he deserves to, you know, have a shot as a starter going into next year here as well for Taylor Cornelius. Now, the question always becomes is Chris Jones is in charge. So does any of this even matter? Because he will change the roster 25 times before the end of the season. He will probably discard half the roster and start fresh in the offseason. So will we see these guys in an Elks uniform next year? Or will we see them elsewhere in the league making an impact is what we will have to watch and see in the offseason. So those are the four games here for week number 14 in the CFL. I see a lot of fun comments flying in the chat. NFL tonight with the Denver Broncos, Seattle Seahawks going as well. Yeah, great time for football. Right now, let's take a look next at our betting results for week number 14, powered by BetStamp. You can track our picks all season long at betstamp.app. Search for at CF Countdown Pod. And you can sign up there free with code CFC to help you find the best odds across many different sports books to maximize the value of your online sports betting wagers. This week in our picks, every Wednesday night, Trey, Adam, and myself, we make our picks against the spread based on the BetStamp best odds for the game. A rough week for yours truly this week as I went 1-3. I did take the BC Lions at -2.5. That didn't pan out. My coin flip worked, and I took the Argos at -1, and that's the only game I got right because I did take Saskatchewan +7.5 and Edmonton +10. Those big spreads always mess with me there. Adam had a 2-2 week. He took BC, and he took Ottawa, which he didn't get right. He did take Calgary at -9, and perhaps a little controversial, I don't know, did switch his pick from Saskatchewan +7.5 to Winnipeg -7.5 at the last moment. Didn't like the health situation with the stomach flu there for the Riders. We'll allow it. He got it in under the wire, but a clutch play here to go 2-2 for him on the week, whereas our resident betting expert, Trey, did lead the way once again this week with a 3-1 week, much like Adam and I took BC at -2.5, but he did take Toronto -1, did take Winnipeg -7.5 to begin with, full credit, and also took Calgary at -9. Records on the season. Trey leads the way at 32-23. I am in second place at 30-25. And Adam is close behind at 29-26. In terms of our consensus picks, which you can find on the BetStamp app this week. Well, we ended up going with BC -2.5. That didn't hit. Toronto -1. Thanks to Trey and I, we did get that one right. Saskatchewan +7.5. Here's the controversy. We locked in the picks already earlier in the week before Adam changed his pick. So the consensus is really just me on that one. So blame me, I guess. +7.5, Saskatchewan did not hit, and Calgary -9, thanks to Trey and Adam. 2-2 week in the consensus picks ever since we started tracking them 14-12. Now let's take a look over at our CFL Fantasy League results. And let's start off with the CFL Podcast Fantasy League. Adam, Trey, and myself are all playing in that this season, trying to make our way into the playoffs with 3 weeks remaining in the season before we get into the playoffs here, playing against a number of other podcasters from around the CFL. And, this week, Adam faced off against Superfan Mike from the Turf District podcast, put up 68 points on the week. Not a great week here, Adam. Sorry to say, you do fall in that matchup, 7-6 on the season, still holding on to sixth place, still in the playoffs as of right now. Jake Mayer, Frankie Hickson, James Butler, Kyron Moore, Dylan Mitchell, Brandon Banks, and Saskatchewan's defense. A rough matchup here for Trey as well, who put up 62.5 points on the week. Did lose to Andrew, for also from the Turf District, 7-7 on the season. Sorry, I think I got the matchups mixed up. Adam faced Andrew. Trey faced Mike. Both lost their matchups, unfortunately, either way. Trey is at 7-7 on the season, right behind Adam in seventh place. Trevor Harris, AJ Ouellette, Brady Oliveira, Dalton Schoen, Keon Schaefer-Baker, Greg McRae, and the Winnipeg defense rounded out his lineup. Myself, I was on the bye week this week, and of course it's on the bye week I finally get across the 100-point mark again for the first time in a while. 102.9 points for me, thanks to Taylor Cornelius, Frankie Hixon, Kadeem Carey, Malik Henry, Dylan Mitchell, Greg McRae, and the Argos defense. Still holding on to first place in the league here. Is I've officially locked up my playoff spot, so have a couple of others, and four more spots to go down the stretch here. Make sure you check out all of those other great podcasts involved. Special shout out as well to the Turf District podcast, who I believe are hitting episode number 250 tonight. So once you're done with this episode, make sure you go check out their show, or you can find it over on YouTube as well, the Turf District. In the CFC season-long fantasy league, where we did our draft preseason, we made a number of moves along the way. Our results for this week are in, and Mike took the crown with 107.6 points, thanks to Caleros, Oliveira, Schoen, Rimes, Henry, Leggio, and the Calgary defense. I took second spot at 98.5 points, thanks to Taylor Cornelius, Peyton Logan, Eugene Lewis, Curly Gittens Jr., Jalen Acklin, Rene Paradis, and Toronto's defense. Trey coming in just behind at 91.7 with Trevor Harris, AJ Ouellette, Tavares Daniels, Nick Dembski, Reggie Bagleton, Sergio Castillo, and Winnipeg's defense. And a rough week here in this department as well for Adam, who put up just 44 with McLeod Bethel-Thompson, Frankie Hixon, Keon Schaefer-Baker, Braden Lenius, Lucky Whitehead, Brett Lauder, and the Saskatchewan defense. Overall totals on the season, I am in the lead at 1350.2 and loving every minute of it. Mike is at 1182.4 in second place. Adam's at 1050.6. And Trey closing in on his tail at 974.7. Each of the guys did send in a player of the week, and so did I. And here they are for us this week. First up, our first offensive lineman getting a nod of the season, and that goes from Adam to offensive lineman Cooper Richardson of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders, who played in his first CFL game, had a tough matchup here facing off against one Jackson Jeffcoat, put up a sack, only allowed one sack, and didn't take any holding penalties for a team that took so many in the penalties in this game. He was not one of them. So a round of applause for him on his first career game. Surely not an easy one, especially with everything else going on. Mike decided to go to the opposite side of the trenches and went with defensive lineman Willie Jefferson, who put up four tackles, two sacks, and a forced fumble, and was a force to be reckoned with, especially in that second half of that game, and caused havoc for Cody Fajardo and eventually Jake Cadola-Gala, I believe, who came in for mop-up duty down the stretch. My player of the week went to Curly Gittens Jr., 8 catches, 12 targets, 161 yards, and a touchdown for him. Monstrous day. Really was the go-to guy over and over and over again for McLeod Bethel-Thompson, and led to the week, led to the win for the Toronto Argonauts. Kadeem Carey gets a nod also from Trey as his player of the week with 9 carries, 118 yards, 1 touchdown. Also picked up 17 yards through the air. And Trey in the chat makes a great point. Honorable mention, player of the week truly should go to one Sarah Orleski, who did do her final CFL broadcast. She's moving into an official role with the Winnipeg Jets going forward. And what a game, what a way to end off your career with the CFL on TSN in your home province, to have that big Banjo Bowl game, that big Bombers win. And a class act from Caleros and the Bombers to gift her the game ball at the end of the game in this one. Let's take a look at our power rankings here, and we'll start off with me. I've got Winnipeg at number one. Makes sense. Big win. They're 12-1 on the season. Calgary comes in at number two for me. Big win over Edmonton. I think at this point I can't dispute they're the second best team in the league. If Nathan Rourke was healthy, I would argue differently, but I think that that Calgary is the second best there. I put Toronto up at number three. I think they've picked up a couple of key wins here. They're rallying big time. And they're going to take Storm here, I think, of first place in the East Division. I think they look strong at times. I like Toronto. I also like Montreal, who I have at number four for some big wins, as I mentioned earlier, against the West Division. Saskatchewan coming in at number five for me. Again, tough loss here, but I think they've improved a lot once they've started to get guys healthy again. And I think they will be a better team down the stretch. I did drop BC to number six this week, because they haven't looked good since Nathan Rourke went down. Vernon Adams Jr. coming in and playing well and turning things around next week against Calgary. Yeah, that might vault them pretty high up my power rankings, but for now, I've got BC at six. Ottawa comes in at number seven here. Close game, almost pulled it out against Toronto there at the end, but not good enough, and still can't win at home. Hamilton comes in at number eight on the bye, and Edmonton comes in at number nine because their season is basically done, and another beatdown loss at home for them. Quickly going through everybody else here. Mike's got Winnipeg, Calgary, BC, Toronto, Saskatchewan, Montreal, Ottawa, Hamilton, and Edmonton. Adam's got Winnipeg, Calgary, Toronto, Saskatchewan, BC, Montreal, Ottawa, the University of Saskatchewan, because Adam's always got to find somebody to throw in there to make his rankings a little more interesting. Kudos to the U of S. They've been playing pretty well. And then a tie between Edmonton and Hamilton for number nine. Trey's got Winnipeg at one, Calgary at two, BC at three, Toronto at four, Montreal at five, Ottawa at six, Hamilton at seven, Saskatchewan at eight, and Edmonton at nine. If you want to get any of their insights on their rankings, you can, of course, hit them up on Twitter. You can find Mike at Mike Garrell, Adam at Adam Stewart One, and Trey at Trey MB Harness. Well, I think that does it for our week number 14 recap here, because it's almost been an hour, and I'm sure everybody's sick of hearing my voice for an hour straight. So let's wrap this up and let's get out of here pretty soon, and take a look ahead at what's to come on the podcast. Week number 15 preview comes Wednesday night, September 14th. That's 2 days from now. If you're listening live, 9 p.m. Winnipeg time, 8 p.m. Saskatchewan. Adjust to your other time zones. We'll preview each of the games. Only three on the schedule this upcoming week. We'll talk CFL fantasy options, and we'll make our picks against the spread here again as well. You can also check out our Week 15 recap the following Monday. Same time, same place. And you can catch that live at a variety of different platforms. You can find it on YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, Facebook as well. Apologies, anybody looking for the Facebook feed for this one. There were some technical difficulties getting that scheduled, but I'm hoping that will work going forward. And this is all made possible, again, by presenting sponsor Game Time TV, which you can learn more about at watch.gametimetv.ca or facebook.com/GameTimeTV. MB. If you want to follow more about the podcast, you can find us on social media. You can find on Twitter the podcast at CF Countdown Pod. If you want to follow me and chat CFL, CFL Fantasy, been trying to get a little more into the NFL so far with the kickoff this weekend. That's been fun. At Cooper Trooper 42 is where you can find me. Find Mike at Mike Garrell, Trey at Trey MB Harness, and Adam at Adam Stewart One as well, and catch up on everything they've got going in the world of hockey broadcasts and farming and horse racing and all that fun stuff. And of course, CFL talk a lot as well. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/CF Countdown Pod. Make sure you check out all the other great shows from around the Canadian Football Podcast Network as well, at CF Pod Network on Twitter. And as always, thanks for everybody who joined us in the chat this evening. Thanks for everybody who tunes in every single week. And we appreciate if you do all the fun things such as like, comment, subscribe, rate, review, share the show with your friends. Help us grow the show. We greatly appreciate that. Wednesday night, Trey, Adam, and myself will be back together again to preview another week in the CFL. But in the meantime, take care. Have a good one. Bye.